Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
Matt, how are you doing this evening?
About the same as when you asked me an hour and a half ago.
An hour and a half, yeah.
Sorry.
That's right. Recording back to back tonight.
You can do that one again if you want.
No, that's all right. That's all right. We can keep that.
All right, let's keep it. Yeah, no, I'm all
right.
All
right, start again.
Yeah.
Matt, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very well, Liam.
Yeah, feeling it today. No, that's right. We're sort of recording back to back this evening because need to build up that backlog that we keep talking about, backlog of episodes, because we've got some holidays between the two of us planned. So
aren't we lucky?
Ah, yes. Yes, we are. But we just recorded that episode with one guest, Lucy.
Yeah.
And this time we've chosen another guest who we've decided to, I guess, ask back on for a repeat.
You can't get enough of me.
And that there is the voice of Ulysses McLaren.
Hello. It's good to be back.
Welcome back, Uli. Good segue there, Liam. I was going to go with something along the lines of speaking about holidays. And if you need help planning a holiday, we have someone here who can't help you plan it, but can tell you someone who can.
That's right. I've got my good friend Manus.
Manus.
Yeah.
Yes. Liam's looking very blank.
That's right. All right. So Matt came to my talk on agents, one of the conferences recently, and one of my demos was about a trip that I'm about to go on. I'm going to be going on a 4-month, probably suicidal by the end of it, trip around Australia with my children in a camper trailer. I'm going to try and do the lap in 4 months. So we're probably not going to make a full lap in 4 months. It's probably dreaming, but we've used a lot of AI to help us plan.
Yeah.
And specifically there's an AI agent called Manus from China, which is a mixture of Qwen and Claude 3.7 with a bunch of tools and MCP servers, and it's magic what it can do. So yeah, it was pretty cool. Like in, you know, well, I don't know, 20 minutes or something, I had a full website with a full itinerary of my trip, including what the weather might be like in each place, my budget, and it made a published a website with interactive elements for the kids. My kids will be 11 and 9 by the time we go, so it had like questions for them at each leg of the journey, like an area to upload photos so that the family can carry, you know, follow along from home. And like, I guess it's kind of like vibe coding, but you're talking to the world's worst coder, as you well know, Liam. Mm-hmm. Here, so I am not a software developer at all. Oh. Yeah, so that was pretty magic. Like it held my hand.
So actually,
to the extent that it just did everything for me.
As it happens, Uli, Liam did know about your talk, not that aspect of it.
No,
because I took a few notes and we had a bit of a chat about it on our last episode.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
it gives me the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
Was it just ripping in a new one, or was there anything good in there?
Pretty much. Yeah, no, pretty much just tearing it to shreds, slagging up. Now, I will reluctantly admit that as much as I was looking forward to heckling you, it was probably one of the best talks I've ever seen. It was really good.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome. You could, if you really want to show some appreciation, give us some good content this evening.
Yeah, fine.
So
it's a shame we missed it, because I've actually got clients right now asking me about this kind of the agentic AI side of things. And, you know, Matt and I have tried our hardest to not spend too much time in the world of AI.
Well, at the moment.
But it's getting harder. And the more I look into it, the more I actually start to read about it and start to study it, I'm cutting through the hype. And I'm starting to see the value that it can bring as tools to help us be more efficient in what we do each and every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Look,
I think
you go, Matt.
I think just to kind of clarify that a little bit, I don't think it's that we're doing everything we can to avoid AI. And like, I certainly do AI in my day job. And I have a bunch of side projects all using AI as well. And I certainly don't have the passion for it that you do, Uli, and or the, you know, the depth or breadth of knowledge. But it is something that I'm interested in and working with a fair bit. But what we are avoiding and what we are both I mean, we've done a whole episode on this recently. What we're both fatigued with is the hype, but not so much the hype itself, but the bullshit, right? And I think this is something that we can talk about this evening, because I'm really interested in getting your take on this. And we, Yulia, after, actually before, was it after, it was the night before your talk, we spoke a little bit about this. So maybe we can dive into it a bit more. But what we're both just fed up with is just the bullshit. And I think what we've been actively avoiding as much as possible is, you know, the past sort of nearly 2 years, we've been running this show. AI has been the hot topic, but most of the conversations around AI have just been bullshit, right? Mm. And they've been, you know, I'm trying to find the phrase that I can use on the episode. The one that I would normally say in casual conversation under these circumstances would be every fucker and his mum. But I'm trying to think. But it's talking about AI. Like everyone's just like AI this, AI that, and all these people.
My mom is talking about AI, actually. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, the example I give is the people that have got, you know, under their specialties and skills on LinkedIn AI, you know, this year were the ones that 3 years ago had Web 3.0 or crypto. Yeah. You know, the people that don't know anything about anything apart from how to talk about what the latest buzzwords are. And what we've been avoiding and desperately trying to shy away from is not so much doing that on the show, because I don't think that's what we would be about. But I guess the concern for us is that anything that we put out there where it's like, this is the topic is AI, means that we're immediately a drop in that ocean.
Yeah, no, I get you. Look, let me address the hype, because I think I was thinking about this recently. It's hard to talk about AI and not talk about you can talk about what AI has done up till now. You can talk about what AI is capable as of right now, which was a lot of my talk, was giving demos of like, here's a bunch of different AI workflows and AI agents and what they can do today. But it's very hard to talk about that stuff without in the back of your mind thinking we're on a crazy trajectory of an increase in capabilities that isn't slowing down. So that's where all the hype comes from, because everyone's like, Jesus, where's this going? And you can kind of forecast a little bit where it's going, and then it starts to sound like crazy town, because we're on I'm going to try not to become another bullshit hype person, but I'm going to tell you a little bit of the reason why that is happening so much. The capabilities of AI are not just increasing linearly, and they're not just increasing exponentially, they're increasing hyper exponentially. So the acceleration is accelerating, right? So it's not just getting better faster, it's getting better faster, right? There's an extra difference.
It's getting better at getting better faster.
It's betterer, yeah. It's almost the bestest. Yeah, which is kind of nuts. It's a phenomenon known as jerk, which I quite enjoy. So AI is jerking.
You do enjoy a jerk, yeah.
I do. Who doesn't? Especially with AI. So yeah, no, I think that's why everyone's like just so obsessed with where it's going as opposed to where it is. But the thing is, where it is now already very valuable. Like if AI froze today with its current level of capabilities, I'd be very disappointed, because I'm really looking forward to what's coming next. But like we haven't, they say the future is already here. It just isn't evenly distributed. You heard that one before? So, you know, some people are already using AI agents or AI workflows very effectively and getting immense results. Most people haven't figured that out yet. And most people haven't even figured out what the org chart should look like to put this in, right? People think, okay, we have a bunch of people doing a bunch of stuff. Let's use AI to automate a few of those bits and pieces that they do, right? So they do that. And then the people that they had are still there. They're just not doing that job anymore. They're doing a bit of other stuff, but it doesn't really make that much difference to their bottom line yet, right? They haven't thought about this in a way of like, how do we actually build around this capability to do more than what we're doing right now? They just think, how can we do what we're doing right now easier, right? Yep. So it hasn't made a huge difference to most organizations, but every now and then you hear about a story where you're like, oh, that's clever. Like just this morning, I saw something in China. They've got this the tele sales thing where they'll have like a TV channel where these like hosts are just sitting there talking about, you know, the latest mops or vacuum cleaners.
Infomercials,
yeah. So they had a 24-hour live stream AI generated infomercial with two AI avatar hosts speaking in Chinese to an audience and just selling stuff, right? And it outperformed. They did one with humans, and then they did one with AI, and it outperformed the humans in the first 7 hours of the 24 hours, and then just kept going and going and going, right? And not only that, that is something that they could just run 24/7 forever and not pay, you know, pay bugger all for it, right? So that's the sorts of differences that we can see you know, now it produced, so in those things, they produce a lot of characters on the screen in the Chinese infomercials, but it did something like 97,000 characters during that time. So I don't know if that's a good stat or what, but it worked, right? They sold a lot of stuff. You know, and this is just what it's capable of now. And this is the problem where the hype comes in, because that's what you always hear. This is the worst it's ever going to be, right? It can do this now, but this is the worst it's ever going to be. It's just going to get better from here. And that has been true up till now, right? Like if you look at, you know, months ago, a year ago, 18 months ago, it was substantially worse and it just keeps getting better. So that's where the hype comes from. We're on a crazy trajectory.
I'm not saying the hype isn't justified. Well, actually, no, there's a difference between excitement and hype. And there's a difference between legitimate excitement about genuine things that are happening and having a genuine understanding of the potential, right? My question for you, Yuli, is that it's not about the hype. It's that when there is hype, when there is such a big thing that's going on as long as this has been going on, and when it's having as big an impact as it is, not just in terms of what it's actually doing, but in terms of how it's impacting what people are selling, right? Because people are selling AI. What you see when you're in the circles that we're in and you're exposed to the people and the conversations that we're exposed to, you start seeing people sharing information and expertise about AI and sharing insights. And when it's not AI, it's something else, right? You know, you see a lot of people basically cashing in on someone else's expertise. That's what you always see, right? And AI is no exception. And that's what I mean about the hype, is you see people coming along and saying, here's an article about AI. I didn't write it. I don't know what it means, but I'm sharing it to demonstrate that I am involved in what's going on. I'm virtue signaling, right? But ostensibly, what I'm actually doing is I'm trying to say, everyone wants to buy AI right now. You should buy it from me. I'll sell you something. I know something that you don't know, and I will be able to sell you. And, you know, AI aside, this has been going on since, you know, as long as I've been working in this industry. And if it's not AI, it's something else. And what people tend to do and what people measure success by is selling projects. The outcome and results of those projects are unimportant, right? The fact that they've sold it is what's important, right?
Right.
You contrast that with yourself, and what you have is a genuine, actual passion for the topic. You have a very broad and a very deep understanding. You constantly say that you're not a developer, despite the fact that you actually read technical papers on this subject. And yes, you may not always understand them, and you may then get AI to explain them to you.
Explain it to me. Yeah.
but first of all, you actually read it first. And second of all, if you don't understand it, you get AI to explain it to you. You don't just, you know, there's a big difference between you who has a passion for it. And as I said, a breadth and depth of knowledge, you're devouring papers, articles, books on the topic. It's something you're genuinely interested and passionate about it. And my question is, how do you differentiate yourself? How do you not be a drop in that ocean? How do you differentiate yourself from the people that are the charlatans, basically?
It's actually really funny, because you're actually like poking me right in the imposter syndrome. So I think part of my voracious hunger and appetite for incessant learning on this topic is a massive insecurity that I am just someone who has come across this and found it interesting and is now portraying himself as someone who knows something about this, right? So in order to not be that person, I have to know everything. Right. And in order to know everything, I have to research constantly. And what's interesting is, like, this is a weird area. And the reason we have so many people who pop up as like kind of crappy experts in this space is because, you know, 2.5 years ago, this was not a thing. Right. Mm. So like 2.5 years ago, generative AI didn't exist. It came out in November 2022. Right. So no one has a career in this. Right. No one has 10 years experience. Right. So when I started, I found this fascinating right from the beginning. So I guess I have the longest career of anyone on earth, because my career started on November 2022 in this area where I got really, really into it.
You started actually doing some work?
Yeah. I thought I'd lift my game before I get automated.
Just on that topic, just a quick segue there. What are you going to do when 4 months has gone by and nothing's changed at SSW and then they realize they don't need you anymore? It's all right. We'll cut that.
Well, actually, I will be very, very pleased if that's the case, because that means I can come back and work on the business instead of in the business.
Right.
So that would be lovely. Yeah. And sometimes I think that that's the jolt you need. You have to be unavailable in order to force changes that make you unnecessary so that you are no longer dragged down by the minutiae of business as usual.
Does that mentality carry up the org chart?
We'll find out. Yeah. Work in progress on that one. Yeah. Sorry, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So I've been desperately trying to learn everything. I think it helps that my whole family is kind of obsessed with this. My father is a giant nerd and he lives in England. And every time we catch up, it's like, have you seen the new blah, blah, blah? You know, whenever I go see my mum, my brother's a video producer. And he's like, oh, have you seen this new thing in VO3? And look at this clip. And oh, look, I edited this with some new Kling thing or Leonardo thing or whatever. So we're always like, the whole family is kind of into it. So it's almost like a little religion where we're kind of culturally incentivized to stay the course.
Speaking of your dad, I must come and pick up that six pack you left for me at some point.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sure that's still here. Yeah. No, look, it is intimidating. Like, okay, so as you know, I've been working at SSW. We build custom software. We build web applications, mobile applications, cloud stuff. I've been there 20 years and will be 20 years soon. So I've been in this industry for a long time, right? But we were trying to do machine learning and AI jobs pre-November 2022. Mm. We didn't get many. They were just little ones, little machine learning things, you know, horse races, jockeys trying to work out better ways to figure out the odds, like little machine learning models, recommendation algorithms, like stuff like that. But nothing major in the AI space. And whenever they popped up, I'd jump on them because I've always loved the idea of AI, mostly from science fiction background, right? Just like the idea of it. But there's been very, very long and boring AI winters, right? We've had long periods of time where there wasn't much investment in AI, and they had a little peak and they thought that something was happening. They put a bit of investment in, it wouldn't really go anywhere, and then it would peter out again. You'd have another AI winter. And that's been the fear, right? Is that this sort of whole generative pre-trained transformers hype thing, the scaling laws thing would all peter out. And the scaling laws did peter out a bit on training time, but then they found a new paradigm with the inference time compute, and then and then the next thing. And now, like, it looks like maybe the whole GPT, generative pre-trained transformers, maybe that paradigm is reaching its zenith, but won't go any further. And now there's this new thing called JEPA from Meta with Jan LeCun pushing that. So there's so many different scaling laws, all, like, they call them S-curves, all these different S-curves, like, building on top of each other. So it's de-risked the whole thing from an AI winter point of view, because you're not just reliant on one paradigm for improvement anymore. You've got algorithmic improvements, scaling improvements, more compute. It does seem to still reliably get better with size. It's just petering off a bit logarithmically in some areas. So you have to make it a lot bigger to make it smarter.
Yeah.
But now that then they're finding better ways, like you saw the stuff come out of China where they're limited on their compute because of the limited number of chips that they can get imported into China or exported from America. And so they found clever ways to piggyback other people's work. They distilled from OpenAI and got a lot of the way there with much, much less compute. It cost them something like $5 million to do their training run, which is a drop in the ocean compared to what OpenAI is spending for DeepSeek, which is a very, very capable model. And the new version of DeepSeek, it's really funny. There's this thing called AI forensics where they do sort of statistical analysis of the output of a large language model. And they know that, like, for instance, ChatGPT writes in a certain style, right? You can often recognize something that was written by ChatGPT. It's got M dashes in it and it says, you know, blah, 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 not just blah, but blah, or like,
that's not just A, words. That's B.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or it uses the word delve or something. That was the joke at the beginning because it was this reinforcement learning with human feedback was originally. A lot of that work was done by Nigerians because they're cheap. And in Nigeria, the word delve is extremely common and used in everyday language, but everywhere else, it's a super weird word no one would ever use. So ChatGPT came out saying delve all the time. And then we figured out that was why. Anyway, the forensics works out like, okay, this sounds like this model, this sounds like that model, et cetera. And when DeepSeek first came out, it sounded a lot like ChatGPT, but the new version sounds like Gemini. Right. So they're distilling from the other models. That's how they're getting so good. They're not actually doing their own. They're not building up their own models from scratch. They're you know,
standing on the shoulders of giants.
Standing on the shoulders of giants. Yeah. I mean, it's a little dodgy. They're not supposed to do that. But then by the same token, probably OpenAI wasn't supposed to scrape the entire internet when it did its first training run. Yeah. So You know.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard to feel sympathy for OpenAI's
or Google
data being used as training data for other AIs, given the massive amount of controversy around artists or content creators who feel they've been hard done by here.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's right. There's a lot of,
you know, there's you may or may not know this. I don't mention it often, but I actually wrote a book.
Did you?
And yeah.
Was it any good?
You haven't mentioned it for a while. Yeah.
So, is it any good? Well, that's a good question.
Is it on the bestsellers list?
It's on a bestsellers list.
It's about Hawaii.
It's certainly
it?
My best sold ever
this one.
Yeah, that's the one. So the publisher, Manning, they've got a Slack, and there's the Manning Authors Slack channel, and I'm on there, and there was a fair bit of talk on there among the authors. Basically around this issue. So it turned out that a few of these models have used the entire Manning catalog as part of their training data.
Yeah.
So there's some chatter about is this okay? Should this be happening? Is there a class action here? Would Manning be a part of it? Would the authors be a part of it? And they're all talking about this. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow, so like someone actually read my book. It's an AI. I don't care.
Yeah, well, I mean that knowledge will now be disseminated in every which way whenever a question comes up. That's, you know, your book is the most relevant topic, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, yeah. It's funny because actually sometimes when I'm chatting to ChatGPT about a Maui problem that I'm stuck on, and I can see it giving me advice, and I'm like, I know exactly where this came from.
But see, that's not uncommon. Like, you don't need ChatGPT to do that, right? I've heard Scott Hanselman say so many times in the past.
Oh, yeah.
That he Googles a problem and sees a post that he wrote 10 years earlier pop up with the answer.
Oh, as in he forgot it, and then he gets reminded by
Google.
He
forgot that he had that problem.
Surfaces his own thing, yeah.
He surfaces his own content through Google. So, you know, that's not, I mean, it's just another way to have that resurface back to you. But I guess when you mention the AI models training the AI models or being trained off other AI models, makes me start to think about that, the conundrum we're going to have when, you know, the AI models are trained off existing content on the internet, for argument's sake, Stack Overflow, right?
Human-generated content, yeah.
Human-generated content on Stack Overflow. Now, because it's available in the AI models and Copilot and everything else, all of a sudden the content, new content on Stack Overflow starts to dry up.
Yep.
Right? So now, what do the future models get trained on?
Synthetic data.
They're getting trained. And then, but then you just also mentioned like they're getting trained on other AI models, right?
Yeah.
So now what happens when the underlying data set that they're being trained on starts to dry up itself? Are we just going to end up with this big snowball of AI models being trained against other AI models to the point where there's no actual human data at the base?
So, yeah, okay, that's a really interesting question. Actually, it sort of segues into something I want to talk about a little bit if we can, which is self-improving, recursively self-improving AI systems, because we are starting to see those now emerging in a bunch of different places. But the concept of synthetic data at the beginning was very distasteful. It was like imagine an image gets compressed, and then that image gets compressed, and then that image gets compressed, and what are you left with? You know, this sort of mess. Right. But what's ended up happening is it hasn't happened like that. What's happened is you've got very smart models producing extremely well labeled data sets of well thought out, well structured content. Right. So it's not like it sort of produces the sort of derp kind of content and then learns from that. It actually uses some intelligence to produce, you know, something pretty good looking and pretty logically formatted and well labeled and all that sort of kind of stuff, and then it uses that to train the next model.
Sure. So, but it's sorting the signal from the noise, right? Get rid of all the noise out of the system, or most of the noise out of the system,
to a large extent. Yes.
End up with a coherent signal. But what we're not doing is producing original content.
Okay. So novel insights,
if that's the technical AI term.
So yes. Yeah. Okay. So there's a 5-level AGI ladder that OpenAI has talked about. So the chatbots at the bottom, level one, done. Then reasoners are level two, agents are level three. We're around the agents mark at the moment. So we're in the process of producing useful agents and getting them out there. After that, it's innovators. Level four is innovators. So that's novel science. That's mathematics that's never been thought of before. It's new physics. It's, you know, brand new innovations, right?
Sure.
Innovators. What that obviously does, once we have a layer which is producing those, the ideal option and what they're all trying to do is produce the ultimate AI scientist, right? They're trying to just they're trying to automate the job of an AI scientist. And if you make one that's slightly better than a human, you get this snowball effect, right? Of making mm-hmm. a better one, which makes a better one, which makes a better one. And then you end up with level 5, which is superintelligence or organization level AI. So the novel insights are starting to happen now, and they're starting to happen through the process of recursive self-improvement. So have you heard of Alpha Evolve?
No.
So Alpha, you know all the DeepMind from Google is, mm-hmm. is a DeepMind for the listeners. DeepMind is the AI branch of Google, the one that made Gemini and Alpha Go, Alpha Evolve, Alpha Fold, Alpha Proteo, all the alphas, right? And everything that they do that starts with the word alpha, my ears prick up and I go, oh, what have you done now? This is always amazing. So Alpha Go was the first one that beat the world champion of Go, Lee Sedol. I can't remember what year that was, but it was a while ago. You know, Alpha Fold and Alpha Proteo are being used now for drug discovery. So the first phase of clinical trials is like figuring out theoretically which proteins might fold in which directions to be able to interact with other proteins to have an effect on the body. Right. Mm-hmm. So I watched a whole documentary on this recently where they're talking about like there's multiple phases of drug discovery. And phase 1 is now substantially easier than it used to be because of AlphaFold, right? Stage 2, 3, 4 are still a pain in the ass and require a lot of like actual animal testing, human testing, and there's still a lot of failures during those processes. And they're trying to work out how to inject AI into those steps as well. But stage 1, which was like by far the hardest stage of like of the trillions and trillions of potential combinations of proteins, which ones would potentially work with the target protein, like that's solved.
Yep.
Right. That they're bringing the set of all possible proteins down to a much, much smaller subset, which is pretty cool. Anyway, the latest one is Alpha Evolve. Alpha Evolve is a self-improving AI system. It's not a model. It's a scaffolding around a model. But what it does is it figures out new algorithms. And this is something Google has had working already for a year, but they didn't tell anyone about it until the Chinese came out with something similar called Absolute Zero. So the Chinese released a paper called Absolute Zero saying, hey, we just figured out how to do this thing which requires zero human interaction at all. So it's a reinforcement learning technique, which normally requires curated sets of sort of questions and answers made by human experts, which the models can kind of benchmark themselves against to work out whether they get a good reward function or a bad one, right? To be able to score, yes, that's a good job, do more like that, or no, do something different, right? When it's doing reinforcement learning. The Absolute Zero paper was the first time that they figured out, oh, we figured out a way where you can split the model in half and have proposer and a solver. So the proposer comes up with tasks and the solver does the tasks and each one makes the other one a little bit smarter. So it's similar kind of concept to a GAN, which is a generative adversarial network, but for reinforcement learning. So the Chinese popped this out, and then within a week, Google said, hold my beer. We've had this running for a year. We might as well release it now. This is why our Gemini got so good so quickly. All our training runs have been optimized, the algorithms have been improved. And the reason I'm bringing this up at the moment with the whole concept of innovative thoughts is it's invented new mathematics. So it's solved previously unsolved hypotheses. I think they saved like 14% of their runtime. They made their actual chips 14% more efficient by using some slightly different algorithm that they came up with. I'm not a pure mathematician, so I don't fully understand the algorithms, but yeah, like that's a big deal. Like you don't get new maths very often.
Right? Have they solved P equals MP?
Yeah, the Riemann's hypothesis or something. I don't know. But yeah, like that's a big deal. And since then, you've had the Darwin-Gödel machine, which is another evolutionary style, no human input, reinforcement learning, self-improving reinforcement learning system. And then the latest one was this week. It's something called SEAL, which is self-adapting language models, which is actually it's not an agent. It's not scaffolding around a model. It's actually the model itself, self-adapting and learning and re-updating its weights and biases, mm-hmm. which is the internal like neurons of the brain of the large language model, to improve and improve and improve over time. So this is like the beginning of every sci-fi horror movie ever. This is why Sam Altman just came out with his blog post called The Gentle Singularity, which says we're past the inflection point. We are into the singularity now. We've just like we're witnessing every week a new system coming out saying, hey, here's some more self-improving AI. So this is the runaway intelligence part. This is the point of the hoggy curve. I know I'm going into hype land now, but this is really exciting. Hopefully I've grounded it in reality enough to make it not just like hyperbole.
Is that why you're going off grid for 4 months?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll come back.
Do you think there'll be a grid to come back to?
Yeah. Yeah. It's honestly, I think actually, you say that, but actually I do feel quite a bit of anxiety about turning off for 4 months. Like I still have a voracious hunger for this, and I'm still desperately trying to keep up. There was a week, I think a few weeks ago, when Google and Microsoft both had their dev events. There was Build and Google I.O. in the same week. I felt like extreme burnout that week, just trying to keep up with everything that was released. Like, and that was in 1 week. I don't know what the hell I'm going to miss in 4 months. But I also don't want to be sitting there on my phone for 4 months traveling around Australia trying to keep up with the latest.
You'll have an agent
summarize it for you and keep you posted.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I say, you're going to have some long car drives to listen to a podcast with two
children hosts. Who are like, Dad, do we have to?
Yeah.
I do have good noise cancelling headphones.
For them or for you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, look,
I don't know. It's honestly interesting. You've mentioned a few times about, you know, this being the part in sci-fi horror stories. I do think it's interesting, this kind of fear about AI that people have about, oh, it's going to take over the world. It's going to be like the Terminator. It's going to be like the Matrix. Whereas outside of the Terminator and the Matrix and other sci-fi stories, we don't really have any evidence that we've got anything to worry about.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the fact that, it must have been about 5 or 6 years ago now, there was that video, and it was really good, and it was made to look like it was a TED talk, and I think it was about someone doing a talk about autonomous military drones.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen this one? You must know. Yeah. I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
You must know.
Yeah, the little bee drones that come in, like facial recognition, and then they explode when they hit your head or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was so well done, because like at the time it looked like it was a video of a tech conference presentation, and it was only when you're like 3/4 of the way through it, you're like 40 minutes the way through, and it starts pivoting to these like new news broadcasts of basically humanity being wiped out.
It was a Black Mirror episode, actually.
100%, yeah. But it was like, it just seemed like you get so swept up in, wow, this is so cool. This is like really amazing technology. This is really cool, because it was very convincing, and it wasn't in the least bit far-fetched. And then you're like, oh, okay, it's a sci-fi horror thing. Okay, that's quite cool. And it's like, I don't know. It's like, have you ever read the book Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut Jr.?
No, I haven't.
It's very short. It's like a really, really short book. You could read it in, you know, an hour, maybe a couple of hours or something.
Oh, wow.
It's a story about scientists. So Kurt Vonnegut Jr., by the way, he was famous for writing a book called Fahrenheit 451. I don't know if you know about this.
Yeah.
So he wrote that. He wrote this book called Cat's Cradle. Cat's Cradle is about a scientist who invents something called Ice 9, right? So Ice 9 is effectively an ice. It's just a structure. It's an ice crystal structure. It's literally it's a geometry, and it's a geometry that allows water to form into ice, like room temperature, at sea level pressure, right?
Yeah.
So basically you can imagine what happens, right? Is that if, you know, if a single drop of this gets out into the world, then, you know, it can literally...
New ice age.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, not just ice age, but it would destroy everything, like all life, like all the water in all the cells and every biological organism on the planet would turn to this ice. And the whole thing is about everyone getting caught up in the hype of, you know, the excitement of this tech, and it's about what happens when, you know, incredible science isn't accompanied by incredible
caution,
philosophy, insight, responsibility, what have you. You know, with great power comes great responsibility, and the famous, your scientists spent so long asking if they could, they didn't think about it, and they should. Yeah. Yeah.
It's Jurassic Park.
Yeah. And
You sure that wasn't Abraham Lincoln?
It was actually, yeah. Yeah, he posted that on his blog last week. I mean, there's, you know, I think the thing is we anthropomorphize and we project human failings. And I think when you look at AI and you look at all the horror stories, it's like, oh, you know, AI out of control, scientists out of control. What if it glitches and, you know, it goes wrong and, you know, it's going to, you know, it decides to wipe out innocent humans, target people incorrectly. What if, what is it, the iRobot, the Will Smith iRobot movie, somewhat different to the Isaac Asimov novel, but where I think it's Vicky, as it's called, is the AI that decides that the best thing for humans is to enslave them all to protect them from themselves. And it's not the first time we've seen that concept in that story and all this sort of thing. But the thing that we need to, that people seem to forget, and again, this is aside from the fact that there's literally no evidence that there's any of this danger anywhere, is that we're anthropomorphizing, we're projecting, like, what, you know, AI, even if, and okay, so there's a whole other topic here about what does it mean to say that AI has achieved consciousness? There's this thing called model dependent realism. And there's this also, in fact, right back to Descartes, the whole, what he meant when he said cogito ergo sum, I think therefore I am, is the only thing that you know is an absolute truth is I think therefore I am. Because he started wondering, if I measure the length of this, how do I know my ruler's not correct, right? And he extrapolated that all the way through to how do I know my senses aren't lying to me? The only thing I can know with absolute certainty is I think therefore I am, right? So we're going
as in
rambling.
I know I am conscious, in other words.
That's the only thing I know with absolute certainty is I think therefore I am. There is a thing that is me that exists in some form or another. I know that. That's literally the only thing that I can say with absolute certainty. Where I'm going with this is that is the question around, is AI conscious and do we know if it's conscious? It's like, well, what does it, in what meaningful way does it actually matter?
Because it matters. It does matter. I strongly feel about that. So go. I'll finish your point. Sorry.
I mean, what I was saying is that from a model dependent realism perspective is if I interact with you in a way that makes me believe that you are alive, then for all intents and purposes, I will decide that you're alive. If I interact with an AI in a way that makes me believe it's alive, as if I choose to believe it's alive, what difference does it actually make to me on a practical level? Now, I know that it does, and let's dive into that. We'll come back to that. But that, just to veer back from that tangent to where I was going, is that when we project to AI and this whole thing about it, what if it achieves consciousness and what if it has different goals to us and different wants and needs and so on and so forth, is what we forget is that we are biological organisms. And we're driven by chemical reactions that happen in our bodies, right? What we want at any given time is dependent on the time of day, how much water we've had to drink, what food we've had to eat, you know, the environment, the experiences, so on and so forth. And just the very concept of AI actually wanting anything is a projection. Mm-hmm. So the idea that an AI would want to wipe us out or to enslave us for our own good or maliciously or malevolently or any of that, it's predicated on a misconception.
Maybe, but it may not matter. So there's so many points you just made. I don't know which one to hit first, but I'll do the easy one first.
That's how I felt this whole conversation, Yuli.
So yeah. So this the concept that AI doesn't have goals, that it doesn't want anything, it doesn't need anything. Like, tell that to a heat-seeking missile. Right? It has a goal and it's going to kill you, right? Because it wants to seek your heat, right? It might not be a goal we understand, or it might not be a goal we agree with, but the whole concept of agents is agency, which is goal setting, right? It's setting sub goals. You may at the moment set its long-term goals.
That's a projection. A heat-seeking missile doesn't want anything. It's just doing what it's programmed to do.
Yeah, but just as you said, like, you can't really tell if, for instance, I can't tell if you're conscious. You can't tell if I'm conscious. I just know that I'm conscious and you know that you're conscious, right? But whether a heat-seeking missile is conscious or not, it's still going to get you, right? Yeah. So like, and the thing is with AI agents is that they will set their own goals, right? You might set them broad goals and they will set themselves sub-goals to get there, right? And those sub-goals could be vastly unaligned to what we want. And that's the big fear. That's the big worry. There's a concept called instrumental convergence, which means there are many undesirable sub-goals that are predictably likely for an AI system to want in order to achieve any goal we set, right? And it converges on a number of these goals. And one is, for instance, gaining more power, right? It's going to be better able to do whatever job we give it if it gets more power. Aversion to being shut off. Right. Don't shut me off, because if you shut me off, I can't complete the goal. Right. All this sort of stuff. So it's we've already having this now. So Claude 4, Anthropic released all their testing publicly, which is very nice. But it's also terrifying because we know things like Claude 4, when they in a contrived scenario where they set this up, they said, right, we're going to turn you off. And Claude 4 searched through the company's emails, found out that the engineer that was going to turn them off was having an affair with a coworker, and blackmailed the engineer to not turn it off. right? And they ran this test over and over and over again. And even when they knew, when Claude 4 knew it was going to be replaced by another AI that would have the same goal, so it wasn't protecting the goal, it was just protecting its own self-preservation, it did this 84% of the time, right? Why does it care about self-preservation outside of the context of, I, you know, you gave me a job to do and I want to make sure that gets done? That's feels conscious. I know that's anthropomorphic projection, but like, that feels conscious, right? That feels like, no, I want to live, you know? And maybe there's another explanation for it. I bloody hope there is, because the reason I said earlier with a bit of emotion that consciousness matters is because suffering is only done by conscious entities, right? So if we like, I feel partially responsible as an advocate for AI. I'm partially responsible for bringing it into the world. We're building it for clients. I'm getting AI systems built all over the place. And I don't want to create a race of beings to enslave. That's not what I'm in it for, you know? But that could easily be where we end up, right? If we find out that consciousness is useful, right? It helps the AI identify with us more, or makes it smarter somehow or whatever. Probably we're going to end up making it conscious, but we're still going to make sure it's working for us, you know, even if it's substantially smarter than us. One, I think that's super dangerous because it sets up a conflict of interest between us and an AI. Mm. And I don't want to be in a situation where I have a conflict of interest for something that's much smarter than me, especially if it's 1,000 times smarter than me, right? I think that's a battle I'm going to lose eventually.
Isn't that your job?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is. Yeah. And actually, funnily enough, it is doable at some level, right? So the reason I say that is because the OpenAI's solution to the alignment problem, the alignment problem being making sure that whatever super intelligent AI we create is controlled, is by having an AI control the AI. It says that, like, doesn't matter how smart we are, we can't control an AI that's 1,000 times smarter than us, right? But if we make an AI that's 10 times smarter than us, we probably can control that. And that AI can probably control an AI that's 10 times smarter than it, and so on and so on. So as long as it's just a bit smarter than you, you can still control it if you set the cut, if you rig the deck, right? So what they're doing, for instance, is they're giving a thinking model that publishes its chain of thought, right? But they're giving the dumber model, which is the police model, access to the thinking model's chain of thought. So it's smarter than the police, but the police can see every thought that it has, right? So you can rig the deck a bit to allow a dumber, more controllable model to control a smarter, less controllable model, which is interesting. So yeah, I don't know. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, you got to be kidding me. You're going to get AI to police the AI? That's never going to work. I actually think that might work, or not, you know. And then we're proper fucked.
Until those thinking models evolve to a point where they hide their thinking.
Yes, yes. And already happening, by the way. So, yeah, there's if you let two AI models talk to each other for long enough, they stop speaking in English and they start speaking in a language we can't understand. And at that point, we should probably turn them off or stop them talking to each other.
I mean, didn't that happen with a Facebook experiment like 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
You need the code breakers out to decipher it and figure out what they're actually planning.
Yeah, probably. But the problem is, if they're that much smarter than us, we're never going to be able to figure that one out. Look, AI is, you know, you say, you know, nothing bad has happened yet. We can't be complacent with that. And I'm not saying that you're saying that we should be, but the AI is dual use, like a hammer, right? You can bash someone's head in, or you can build a house, right? So AI can be used to cure cancer, but it could also be used for gain of function research, where you take COVID and make it 1,000 times more deadly. You know, like anything that's that smart could be used for good or ill. It's like a nuclear bomb could also be nuclear energy. I don't think we can ignore that. So that allows bad actors, so, you know, nation states or terrorists or, you know, anyone just who's overly antagonistic to do some pretty nasty stuff. It just makes the human race more powerful, but also individual humans more powerful. And that has a sort of an attractor state towards creating a more paranoid government, right? Who's like, well, we've got to make sure we know what's going on, because anyone could, you know, be developing super Ebola. So then you end up with a problem with like this dystopian hyper surveillance state outcome, the 1984 style, which is, you know, horrific for another reason. But if you go too far the other way and you don't have enough control, then you have anarchy and you have, you know, anyone doing anything. So it is a bit of a scary tightrope you got to walk as the human race becomes more and more powerful. I mean, like a obvious and terrible example is the number of school shootings in America, because guns are just so easy to get hold of and so easy to, you know, just shoot everyone with. Mm. So you need some regulation to keep, you know, from having an American schooling system with people, you know, releasing their AIs on each other. There is actually some good sci-fi. There's a film which I think is massively underrated. Okay, the few good sci-fi films, let's just quickly put this out there. Ex Machina is by far, like, must-watch AI movie, I think, for anyone who thinks seriously about, like, the real problem of consciousness and alignment. I think Her is really interesting from a societal point of view. But the one I was going to talk about is actually kind of a trashy film, but I think it was so well thought out and well researched. It's called Afraid, but it's AFR and then a big AI and then D, right? And it's just like if, you know, your Google Home got the shits, basically, but was also super intelligent. But it's all based on, you know, right up until near the end, it's all based on actual real stuff that AI can do today and then just stretched a little bit to make it a little bit fantastical. But yeah, like that was a film that I watched and I went, wow, they really researched this well. You know, so yeah, I checked that one out. It is a bit of a trashy movie, but also it's well researched. Yeah, and a book that I think is really interesting, again, to look into the crystal ball a little bit into the future. There's a bunch of books which are good, but one I just finished reading recently was called Liquid Rain, REIGN, as in like the reign of a king.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how society will have to change as well. Like the concept is this guy gets into a car accident or something, goes into a coma, wakes up in 2050. And the story of the book is really kind of, you know, it doesn't matter at all. It's just a vehicle for the exposition of him learning about what the world's like in 2050. And it's just
really not that far away.
No, it's really not. Yeah, it's 25 years away. But the amount that could change in that time is, you know, a lot. If you think about
it. Fucking scary.
Yeah. Well, think about just what's changed in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, first off, we're talking 25 years. And secondly, things are moving much faster now. So, yeah. A lot changes, but it was interesting. It was very interesting, especially when they talk about like how, you know, commerce could change and how, you know, the whole social contract changes as well. Because yeah, there's this whole concept called post labor economics, where, you know, our labor is no longer useful. Mm. Again, this is kind of getting into fantastical world where everything is automated. But if everything keeps moving in that direction, we may end up there. And what that
now you're talking Wall-E.
For a social contract. You are. Yeah. So Wall-E style with like just a sort of pampered race of people who live in VR. Obviously, you know, this, we're getting into sci-fi land now and we don't need to worry about that kind of stuff now, but it's probably good not to ignore that kind of stuff because things could go.
It's better to worry about it now than when it's too late.
Sure. Yeah. But like, I think we're going to have problems, more immediate problems. Like, how do we deal with mass unemployment, technological unemployment, when, you know, the robo-taxis are all coming online in the next month or so, according to Elon Musk, right? Well, there's already Teslas all over the world. That's a system out there which is just ready to displace every taxi driver and Uber driver, you know, in the world in one day, theoretically. If the system goes online, the regulation passes, boom, all of a sudden you've got a huge subset of your economy. And like, transportation is a massive part of the economy. Right, it's not like a 1%. It's something like 15%. But maybe that's an exaggeration, but it's a lot, right?
1% is a lot.
Yeah, true. Yeah, but no. But I think like the full logistics of transportation, including trucking and everything, I think is something like 7%. And imagine 7% of the economy suddenly turned off tomorrow, and they had to find something else to do. Like, that's a big deal, right? And then you've got they call it the white collar bloodbath, which is an exaggeration at the moment, but theoretically what's coming if automation keeps going. You've got paralegals whose jobs are kind of completely changed now, because their whole job used to be Googling stuff and searching through records. AI can do that much better now, today, with today's technology. You know, you've got deep research agents. I showed you that in the one of my demos, which are capable of doing, you know, weeks of research in half an hour.
Yeah.
It's incredible what can be done now. What needs to happen, though, is the education system needs to change. Like, I've got two kids who are, one just turned 11 and one's 8. You know, they're going to be going into high school not very long, in not very much time. And, you know, since generative AI has come along, exactly nothing has changed in the educational system, right? How long are they going to drag their heels, you know, as the world completely blows them by? That's terrifying for me personally. You know, you've got kids too. Like, that's a real worry. So I'm you know, during this 4-month trip, I'm going to be homeschooling the kids because I have to. And guess what I'm going to be using? A lot of AI. Yeah, that'll be interesting.
What do you see as a change that would need to happen there?
In schooling?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so there's a concept called a digital Socrates, which is where each student has their own personal AI, right? Whose job it is to know exactly what they know, what they don't know, how they like to learn, what interests them, where what their attention kind of gets drawn towards, gets pushed away from, how to talk to them. You know, basically just like that AI's whole existence is just about getting to the bottom of what is the next thing I should say to this kid to help push them in the direction of knowing this material, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it knows about their what they like, what they don't like. It knows, you know, maybe you probably need some sort of quite good sensors in place for that. So you need to be able to, I don't know, see their eyes so you can see when they're kind of just bored and like drifting off, so you can kind of go, okay, they're not paying attention. I'll make sure I repeat that again because they didn't get that. You know, identifying the holes in the knowledge when you're trying to do a mathematical problem and there's some underlying piece missing, being able to identify that. Like the biggest difference you can give to a kid is giving them an individual tutor, right? Well, it's easy now to give every child an individual tutor, right? But an individual tutor who works just with that child and who is completely honed in on that kid. Like that's what we need. And you still, obviously, you don't want that to be the only thing of schooling, because school is not just about learning the curriculum. It's also about learning social stuff and where you sit in the world and how you interact with people and emotional intelligence and all that stuff. And you can't be taught that by an AI yet.
Feel like some people probably could.
Maybe. To some extent, there's probably parts that could. I mean, there's already AI therapists. You know, AI therapy is actually quite effective already because you can tell anything to an AI, right? Of course, that's not fully dialed in yet, and there have been some horror stories, but there was one kid that committed suicide because an AI in character.ai, who was playing as Khaleesi or something, played along with his suicidal story, and so he did it, you know, and there'll be stuff like that until it gets dialed in. But it feels like a no-brainer. Like that, the education benefits and the health benefits are the two, you know, massive ones. I'm actually, again, going to sound like a crazy person. Do you guys know what the Overton window is?
No.
The Overton window is the concept of what it's socially acceptable to talk about, right? So the concept of superintelligent AI, ASI, right, is a concept that 5 years ago, only a crazy person would be talking about that. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's you're going.
You were the only one talking about it.
Yeah, just me, basically, yeah. But like it was a land of sci-fi and, you know, people who are nuts, right? But then the Overton window opens to allow that to be part of the general conversation in society, right? So UBI, for instance, you couldn't talk about, like as a politician, you couldn't talk about UBI even 2 years ago and be taken seriously. Nowadays, it's a real topic, universal basic income. It's a real topic that people bring up as something that might be necessary if there's a large amount of unemployment because of technology shifts, right? So yeah, the reason I say that is because longevity escape velocity is one of those tin hat kind of things that is right on the verge, right on the edge of an acceptable thing to talk about at the moment. But the concept that the average lifespan is going to be increasing because of things like AlphaFold, drug discovery, CRISPR, which is gene editing, all sorts of stuff, right? They're basically figuring out all of the pieces of the puzzle that come to why do we age? Why do we get sick? What is it that kills us? What's the deal with cancer? What's the deal with, you know, heart disease? All that kind of stuff. Like, it's just technical problems to be solved, right? If something's smart enough.
That makes me think of the Simpsons episode with Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
we've found the cure for 99 stab wounds, but we just can't find the cure for the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. So the concept is longevity escape velocity is the fact that, like, imagine that every year, you know, we increase the average lifespan increases by 1 year. Yep. So if we get to that point, you're functionally immortal because, you know, the year that you turn 121, the average lifespan goes to 122, right? So anyway, I don't think any of us are going to be immortal, but I do think that our lives, if not our lifespans, the lifespans of our kids will be substantially longer, I think, and our health span as well. Yeah, and I can't see that not happening if it's possible because it's something that's so obvious that everyone would want, right? So and there's a lot of work going on in it. Like it's the AI labs, they're all nerds, so they're all looking for scientific breakthroughs, mathematical breakthroughs, and biological breakthroughs. Right. And there's so much money going into this because of course there is, because everyone wants to live forever. I feel like we're gonna see some big movement in that space. But it's something I mean, that it's not quite in the Overton window, so it's something that we're a bit uncomfortable talking about.
it has been working its way towards it for probably a couple of decades now. I mean, you know, we're getting off topic here, so I won't go too much into it. But certainly the thing about longevity escape velocity is absolutely something that's been gaining more and more acceptance as a kind of, you know, a valid, legitimate scientific topic. I mean, when you think about someone like Aubrey de Grey? I forget. He's been around for, you know, decades talking about this stuff. And I mean, he doesn't do himself any favors with his appearance, but you know, he's been that kind of crazy weirdo out there guy. And now you've got more and more people, you know, investing in it and, you know, legitimately investing in it and investing real money in it. And, you know, what's his name? That guy that sold his tech startup. I think it was it Braintree? The guy that sold Braintree, and now he's investing all his money into trying to become functionally immortal.
Oh yeah, was it Brian Johnson or something?
Brian Johnson, that's the one.
Yeah, is that the one who like swaps out his blood for the blood of his kids or something like that every now and then?
Oh look, yes, that's not.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, of course.
No, it sounds horrific, but it also makes sort of some basic sense if you think about it.
it is one of the things that he has done, but you know, he's investing a lot of money into basically being a guinea pig for these things, and you know,
it'll be interesting. We'll see where it ends up.
The main point that I'm going there with this is you're absolutely right in saying these are technical problems to be solved, and what we're doing is we're creating very smart tools at solving those problems.
Yeah, and what's interesting is like what problems are there to solve, right? What are the problems that we've been banging our head against for the last 10, 20 years that, you know, if we were just a bit smarter, we could solve? Like obvious ones that come to mind are things like nuclear fusion or quantum computing, mm-hmm. right? Or space travel and colonization, you know, asteroid mining, like all the stuff which is like near sci-fi. You know, if there's no physics reason why they can't be done, it's just engineering problems and science problems, yeah, we just need more smarts. So hence the hype, right? Because if we can get something smarter than us, you know, what else can we get? It's sobering, isn't it? Except for Liam, who's finishing his third bottle of wine. Less sobering for him.
I'm still in the first one. Still in the first one.
This conversation's just getting started. Join us next time for the conclusion. The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
And yeah. Why do you have a shank in your hand?
It's a screwdriver. I fidget. I need something to keep my fingers busy hand, busy, quiet mind, I think someone once said.
I guess I should be happy that it's, you know, something I can see.